This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Now, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidabra rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Skidabra rinky do.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I've wanted to drive that freaking ho train my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts, and we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Jokes. My love, you didn't need to coax. Oh, Maggie, I couldn't have tried anymore. You led me away from home.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast, the longest running episodic podcast in podcast history. Of course, joining me as always is my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 457 of the longest running gold standard. This is the first time that we've talked since the fun and frivolity of last weekend. So we should talk about that for a moment or two, because we always take that Monday off. Of course, last weekend was our SummerSlam of our lives. And that is, of course, St. Mary's weekend.
Although it's not truly SummerSlam without Armento yelling at some old lady. So I guess it's close, though.
That's true, yeah. Or walking around with a little kid, like, fucking, you know. but it was a good time, as always. Always good to see you and the rest of the crew. We had
broke
a good party.
The record, 92 people.
92 people, huh? I mean, this year in particular, I know I kind of adjusted the dead animal cooking schedule, but a lot of stuff went out the door.
Yeah,
for sure. Record for dead animal burgers and dogs, etc., and some fine Asian sausage. I gotta say, JR, this is what, the third year in a row that we had to head to inside the arena, the Lakeside Arena?
I think so.
In prime time?
Yeah, because, you know, the pictures came up on my timeline today. I must have, like, put them up a week later or whatever that year, but it looked like 2014 was the year that we stayed outside late into the night.
Okay.
Those are the pictures. So, yes, I think the last three we've had to come in.
And I feel like, and I feel like this year we kind of pseudo-planned it a little bit. Like, we kind of were proactive, and I thought we had a great time. I thought that the mood did not change for the first time in a few years. And I feel like downstairs, I feel like when we were inside the arena, we had a good time.
Yeah,
played some Pong into the night, and missed referee Rich. It was kind of sad. First time he's missed in a while, I think ever, actually.
That's it. I'm not going to see him until July now, next year. So sad times. But no, it was a great weekend, as always. One of the highlights of the year for me. And then I have always have my decomposing week, of course, after that to really relax and get it back together. Mm-hmm. Take a few days off from work, and that's it. Finish up the summer, down to 7 weeks maybe-ish of basketball, which is always sad. When I start to, I always have the realization when August hits in the shower one morning where I'm like, wait a minute, we only have like 7 games left this year. It's very sad. It seems always so much games ahead of us back in March, you know. But before you know it, we'll be at the dunk for PC. All cyclical. All right, with us, as always, is, of course, our third man in the booth, the Jimmy Jack Funk to our Terry and Dory.
That's fine. I like Matt's wrestlers, so that's okay.
There you go. Perfect. The Canadian Jimmy Jack Funk. And that is Kelly Nelson. Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing great. This is the first podcast of my 40s, actually.
Wow, that's right. Yes. Did you have a great birthday?
Yeah, I did. The weather's been amazing out here, so we did a lot of walking. We went to the new Spider-Man movie. Yeah, it was great.
Look at you. A couple of 40-year-old bastards on this show. And me.
What'd you think of Spider-Man?
I loved it. I thought it was perfect. They really, you know, captured the essence of the teenage Spider-Man. That was great.
Yeah, I agree. That's very good.
I go to one movie a year, by the way. That's it.
What's that?
I only get to go to one movie a year.
Baby Driver. No,
it's been the last two have been Star Wars, so I think this is gonna be my one movie a year. It's just whatever new Star Wars is out, and then worry about the rest later.
It'll be in 5 months.
is it December again? It's coming out.
Yeah,
so that's it. Yeah, every Christmas break, 18th. Christmas break every year is gonna be my one movie of the year, and that's it.
Well, next year, there's rumored, or is it 2019 that we're gonna have Creed 2? Is that 2019? Okay. I think we're going to
come
Creed
out of retirement for that. That's it. That's my other one. That's my special dispensation.
There you go. All right. Why don't we dive in? Because we've got an interesting show tonight as we are back in our home offices. We are in the big house because we're going to be traveling to Mr. Nelson's neck of the woods on our next show. Close to his neck of the woods. tonight we are close, moderately close. Geographically close. We'll be in the same building as your trashy
baseball
team. all right. So why don't we dive in, boys? Because it is August 25th, 1986, from venerable Madison Square Garden in New York City. A Monday, as it always is. Interesting show. Why? Because on the same evening, Jordan Duncan may have made up his Andre matches at this show. The other half of the roster was at the Michigan State Fair in Detroit. So kind of little, almost like your beloved Sunrise Theater or whatever it is, your little Melody tent there.
Filled with armed robberies and broken down cars.
It's great. Yeah, yes. And Andre matches that don't exist. Yeah. All right. Here was the card. And this might be the reason why this our house show seems a little different than normal. Lanny Poffo defeats – actually, there's no – results, just the matches. Lanny Poffo versus Steve Lombardi. Harley Race took on S.D. Jones.
Hand job Harley Race. So those fans of Jeff Learns Wrestling. Yes.
Yes. Hand job Harley Race. The only guy I know that could take a legend like that. King Tonga versus Greg Valentine, which probably was an awesome match. Little Coco versus Little Tokyo.
Oh, God.
I think you should do a Jeff Learns Wrestling and do nothing but midget matches.
Yeah, he'd probably be into it. I think he'd like the midgets.
He probably would, knowing him. Don Morocco defeated Ricky Steamboat. JYD beat Cowboy Bob Orton. And the JYD won a $50,000 battle royal, which included Ted Arcidi, Handjob. Great, and that's going to be his name. Harley Race, Jim Brunzel and B. Ryan Blair, so the Killer Bees, the Moondogs, George Animal Steel, the Rougeaus. Who are they, JR? We'll talk about them, actually, in a couple weeks. Morocco, Cousin Luke, so one less hillbilly we'll have to deal with tonight. Steve Lombardi, The Hammer, Brutus Beefcake, so the Dream Team, Ricky Steamboat, and Cowboy Bob Orton. So kind of a meaty roster at this show in the Michigan State Fair. So our show, I don't want to say is devoid of talent, but you'll notice this show is kind of laid out a little differently because matches are a little longer and a little more storytelling here than maybe in the past. So
JYD then traded that $50K in for a line of Coke outside the Joe Louis Arena.
Yeah, line of Coke and a lifetime supply of pork rinds.
On MLK Boulevard after the show.
There you go. The rest of our report, JR, what do we got?
It's a huge update. Our last visit to MSG in July, this is what happened since. On July 14th in Lowell, Mass, Handjob Harley Race won the King of the Ring tournament after pinning Pedro Morales in the finals, and we actually talked about that on Jeff Lynn's Wrestling. Check that out. Newest episode did release over the weekend. released like a Harley Race hand job. On the July 19th episode of Championship Wrestling, we have a big tag team match with Paul Orndorff and Hulk Hogan taking on King Kong Bundy and Big John Studd. After weeks of tension between Orndorff and Hogan, we got the payoff. At the end of the match, Orndorff saves Hogan from a double team beatdown. But while Studd and Bundy are outside the ring, Orndorff clotheslines Hogan and gives him a pile driver. As the faces come down to the ring to save Hogan, Heenan leads his family members to the heel locker room to celebrate with the newly turned Mr. Wonderful. On July 26th, Bobby Heenan comes out to thank Jack Tunney for suspending Andre the Giant, but he claims that Giant Machine is none other than Andre himself, and he's going to unmask him and prove it. Tunney has said he's seen the passports of the machine, and I would love to see the machine's passports, and none of them are Andre. He does tell Heenan that if he can back up his claims, that he'll suspend Andre permanently, but if Heenan is wasting Tunney's time, Heenan will be the one that's suspended. On August 9th, after being attacked the week before the flower shop on JYD, by JYD, Adrian Adonis hires a bodyguard to protect him, and that is Cowboy Bob Orton. On the same episode, Freddie Blassie announces they have sold 50% of the contracts of Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff to Slick. We'll talk about that. On August 16th, Roddy Piper returned on the flower shop, appreciating Adrian Adonis filling in for him while he was gone and saying Piper's pit is now back. Adonis says he's not a replacement and that the flower shop is here to stay. More on that to come. On the same episode, King Tonga returned from a... Did he mean Tonga Kid here, probably? Two-year absence, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
He put King Tonga. I'm guessing he meant Tonga Kid.
Yeah, I'm guessing he meant Tonga Kid.
Okay. Yeah. And there you have it.
Interesting turn of events in that stretch. And again, I think we're in for a kind of a unique show this evening. So why don't we dive in?
Let's do it.
Let's do our opener, JR, because and the opener's interesting because once again, we're going to have a kid of a legend. We kind of know the batting average of that of that scenario. What do we got?
Yeah, we do. I do want to call it one quick thing, which I thought was really fun, was the intro on the version we had Gorilla reading down, setting up the show with the knockoff Living in America playing. I thought that was a great 1986 touch right there.
Yeah, so yeah, it was very good. I agree.
All right. So our opener is, of course, yes, the son of the legendary Gene Kaniski, and that is Nick Kaniski taking on our old friend Les Thornton. Well, Nicky Boy began his wrestling career in 1980 after being trained by his father, Canada's greatest athlete. He wrestled for 4 years on the Canadian national team and served as an alternate on the 1984 Olympic team. Began his pro career in 1985 and came to prominence in All-Star Wrestling in Texas, part of the American Breed tag team with Paul Diamond. Ironically, neither member of the team was American. He moved on to Portland Northwest Wrestling in 1986, had a feud with Rip Oliver over the heavyweight title, was unsuccessful there, came to the WWF in the summer of 86 for some house shows in MSG and Boston Garden, and by the end of the year would be over to the AWA. So really not a long run by Nicky Boy. No. But here he is, and I thought he actually had a little potential. We'll talk about it. Interesting match here, his debut. Gorilla wonders if he's Gene's son, and him and Al joke about what an asshole Gene was, which I thought was funny. And then they do confirm, yes, Nick is his son. But Al thinks Les will be a formidable matchup here tonight. Nick is wearing a Swank Canada track jacket. He has that going for him. Heads out to disrobe and gather himself, which Gorilla gives him credit for. We then open with a lockup and a trading of holds as both guys are standing on the mat. Gorilla says Nick is just a year into his career, but has learned a lot growing up. Nick grinds Les on the mat as Gorilla and Al talk about his nice build. Les takes him down with a nice gut-wrench suplex and then turns into a reverse chinlock as the Gorilla talks about the cameramen. Les works some nice heel tactics as Nick fights up, twisting himself and using the hair to take Nick back down. Les gets another gut-wrench suplex for two and then a crucifix for two as well. Nick twists free and grabs the leg, and they continue to trade control back and forth, with neither gaining much momentum. Les eventually gets a reverse half Nelson and clubs the chest hard, and the crowd gets restless here as the two keep rolling around on the mat. Both guys eventually get up, and Les drills him in the gut with two right hands before laying in some knee drops at a hard clothesline. The referee started counting a pin on Nick, even though Les wasn't covering, and Gorilla just rips him for counting when no one was covering. Nick dodges a slam and gets a perfect bridging German for the win. The ref messes that up, too, as he waits forever before counting three, and Gorilla's just shitting all over him during the replay here. Fine match, lots of mat work and hard strikes, good finish. Nick has some potential, I thought, based on this. Even with some of the crowd being out of it, I thought the work was fine, and the referee didn't help things either. It would be cool if he hung around, but of course, as we read, he's not here very long. So I went a star and a half on this opener, Scott.
I believe I did as well. I just got to fix my Google our little Google Sheet screen here, and let's see. I believe I also did a star and a half. The interesting about Nick Kaniski, I feel like he's another actually, I did a star. I did slightly less.
Okay.
The funny thing about Nick Kaniski is he's another guy. Well, first of all, he's another son of a legendary guy, so I was already skeptical because, as we've said,
yes,
we've been swinging and missing, for ranging from David Sammartino to who's that other fucking clown? What was the other son?
Son of a son.
Oh, fucking, what's his name? Skolin's kid. Have we had him yet?
No, I don't think we've seen him on here.
No, he's on the Spectrum. He's been at a few of the Spectrum House shows I was watching. No, he hasn't been at the Garden. Thank God, because trust me, you're not missing much. He's just as abysmal as fucking these other guys are. So I was skeptical going in anyway, because it's just the way it is. But the other thing is, not just that he's somebody's son, but once again, another guy that kind of looks like Barry Windham.
Yeah,
what is with all these skinny guys you already got Spivey, who we'll talk about later because he's on the show later on. So I'm just perplexed. Like, where are they? What's the whole point of having all these blonde dudes in? I mean, Barry Windham's gone. Move on.
Yeah.
You know, it's like crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Spivey was clearly an attempt to replace Windham. I don't think this was. I think it's just a coincidence that he looks like him. That's just the look of guys in the 80s, you know? Skinny, blonde, strung out.
So.
I don't know. But guy looked more legit because of his build
and his
wrestling background. You know, he looks like an athlete.
He kind of reminded me of Brad Rangins, except not as blonde and, a lot better pro wrestler. I mean, Rangins obviously was a good amateur guy, but typical AWA boredom. But the match itself was fine. I mean, Les Norton's a serviceable guy. They had some good roll-ups. They had some good, pin reversals and stuff. It was a fun match to watch. That referee was fucking terrible.
Oh, God.
And I'm telling you something now, JR. We make fun of the refs, but they're starting to – I mean, once in a while here, guys are screwing up. But now they're actually starting to ruin the matches.
Yeah.
And this ref just totally – I mean, why are you getting down?
I mean that's like a Josh Capron. That's a Josh Capron level move right there. Counting the guys out here. I mean, he's not even – he is not even like near him. He just gets down and starts counting. It was so weird. I don't know what the hell he was doing.
You know what we really needed? Look at that dumb referee.
Yes, we did. We needed Mike Filippo McKenna shaming the referee.
We needed
for sure.
Great. We needed the iconic, legendary, God rest his soul, Filippo. Because it's the truth. It's the truth. These referees are absolutely horrendous.
No,
But I thought it kind of ruined the match a little bit in that aspect. But no, Kaniski wasn't bad. This was not a bad match. Like I said, I gave it a star. It was fine. Les Thornton's a decent, serviceable old guy. You know, gets some good reversals in, and he's a good mat worker. So, I mean, the match wasn't atrocious. Your official time was 9:49, and you're going to see a lot of meaty match durations tonight, more than normal for an MSG house show. I thought the match was really good, as good as it was going to be for these two guys. And I like Les Norton, old grizzled guy, more British guys that Alfred could talk weird about. So otherwise, it was serviceable. It was a good opener. Nothing great, but did its job.
Yeah,
and again, your final your duration is 9:49.
All right.
Next up,
Kelly's having some tech issues here. So we lost him for a minute. He's trying to get back on, but we're going to move along. And when he gets here, he can jump in. Hopefully, for this next match. But yeah, we'll keep everyone abreast of where Kelly is right now, somewhere in the Great North country.
All right. So next up, JR, we have a guy we've seen in and out. He's had a hot 1986 so far, and facing one of our favorite punching bags.
Yes, although not
MSG
as of late. He's been more enjoyable as of late. We'll see if it continues. Again, a guy that was really ruined by that initial push, but has kind of figured it out since. And this match, we do have Jake Roberts taking on Steve Yaffe, and the continued fall of Yaffe's ongoing. And I don't think we said he's just been kind of figuring it out as of late. And unfortunately for him, it's too little too late. Roberts is really rolling in the middle of his red hot feud with Steamboat, looking for another solid MSG win. The match graphic and Chiron wrong again. We usually have one of these a month, it seems like now, and they had it as Siva Yaffe. Poor guy, can't even get his name right. Jake has such a great heel smirk during intros, and Gorilla's noting that he's actually getting cheered from the crowd. So I thought that was interesting that they call that out. Gorilla also talks about what a great athlete Afi is, and Al says he's very colorful and has been most successful, which I don't know what the fuck he's been watching. We open with a lockup, and Jake kicks him in the gut to break it, and then goes to work to cheers. Gorilla talks about Jake's cunningness and says once he gets the upper hand, you can't stop him. Jake peppers away and works the arm until Afi pops up and lays in some chops and a one-foot dropkick. The crowd's all fired up as Afi unloads until Jake slithers to the floor to regroup. Afi works the arm as Jake comes in, mixing in some strikes. Afi scales the top rope while holding the arm and springboards off the top into an arm drag that sends Jake bailing again. Al talks about Afi's suction cup feet as Jake comes in and levels Afi to take over. Gorilla and Al wonder if Jake is psychologically affected by not having Damien with him tonight. CV comes back and gets a cross body block for two, and Jake reels to the floor yet again. Jake returns, and Afi grabs him by the arm and gets right back in control until Jake rattles him with a jawbreaker to turn the tide. Jake follows with a gut buster and then unloads him with some precision offense, picking Afi apart one strike at a time. Afi gets a flash near fall, but Jake twists it into a chin lock. Afi fires out of the hold, but Jake boots him in the gut and shoves him to the floor to cut him off. Afi tries to come back in with a sunset flip, but Jake blocks it with a punch and then went back to the chin lock. Afi wiggles free once more, but Jake whacks him with a clothesline for two as Gorilla puts over his quickness. Jake slings Afi into the top buckle, but Gorilla says you can't hurt him that way, of course. Jake keeps hammering away, but whiffs on a back elbow drop off the middle rope. Afi takes advantage and slugs away before taking Jake over with a backdrop. Afi dances and drops a headbutt and then shoves Jake to the floor. Stevie goes and gets Jake and pitches him inside and heads up top, but he catches Jake's knees to the gut as he comes off, and Gorilla chastises him for taking way too long up top, and Al piles on that. Jake recovers and snaps off the DDT for the win. That was a fun match. Afi continues to improve. The crowd is really into it. Nice psychology with a good ebb and flow. And Jake is so fun out there to watch on offense. And they really have kept the DDT just as a lethal move, the way he works it in when he can and pretty much just lights out whenever he hits it. But his offense throughout the match is so cunning and so precise. And it just has a snap to it, which is really cool. Afi, again, he's really turned it around and gotten much better since his debut. You know, I think part of it too is he's not working it at the pace he was trying to work at early on, so he's not getting winded, and he's probably just working his way into shape as well a little bit more. But I think part of it too is that he isn't just doesn't have those expectations. I think he's out there going out there and able to be himself a little bit more. But again, it's too little, too late. They ruined him out of the gate. Too much pressure with the Superfly stuff. But other than that, I think he's been better as of late. What do you think for this one, Scott?
This match was solid enough. I gave it 2 stars, mm-hmm. as well as you. Your official match time, 16:46. And again, they kind of had to stretch matches out a little bit because they didn't have as meaty a roster as they did at the other place. There was something about the pacing, and I think the fact that they had to fill almost 17 minutes kind of lends to your theory about Afi kind of going a little bit slower pace, because if you try to do the CV Afi pace for 17 minutes, this match would have been a fucking disaster.
Oh, for sure.
Jake was really good. I mean, Jake, he's been here now, a little over a year, I guess, now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's gotten down the way that the garden works, the way that atmosphere is, and he's working the crowd. I really think that Jake's been watching Savage, because I think he's Savage at a slower pace not in terms of work rate, two different wrestlers, but in terms of kind of storytelling the crowd and kind of getting in and out of the ring and kind of working the group and working the emotion and working your opponent. He obviously goes at a much more deliberate pace than, say, a Savage does. But he really kind of helped CV Afi out here and really made the match better than it really should have been. No Damien, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I think that CV Afi could end up being a pretty serviceable employee for a while. I mean, he's too late for him to be any kind of legitimate threat. I think they that bridge.
And at the very least, they can make him. He can make guys look good. He's good enough at this point where he can do that. And maybe maybe he's more of in good position as like a tag guy.
Right.
You know, like we had seen with that brief run with Tonga. So, all right. Any final thoughts, Scott?
I don't know. Billy Red Lions just ran in the middle of the of your comment there.
Not smooth at all, Kelly. Welcome back, though.
Yeah. Welcome back, Kel. Quickly, before we get to your comments on this match, any comments on the Kaniski-Les Thornton opener?
Anything you want to throw out with a grade?
Well, I mean, yeah, this I'd heard of Nick Kaniski, and of course, Gene Kaniski, Big Thunder, is a legendary Canadian wrestler, the real Canada's greatest athlete, and I'd never seen
a terrible referee. Which we all saw.
Terrible referee.
Greensboro in 1983.
Yeah, I'd never seen Nick Kaniski before, and I was kind of surprised by his appearance. He was wearing his father's jacket, it looked like, but he looked like Johnny Ace as a wrestler. Flowing blonde mullet. Yeah, so that was not who I would have pictured in my head, thinking of the son of Gene Kaniski at all. It was an interesting match because the mat work was really snug. But the crowd didn't care. And, you know, I think I heard boring chants before bell even rang. And there was tons of boring chants throughout. I mean, this match had no chance to succeed in front of this crowd. But it worked at a very, you know, fans of Japanese shoot style may appreciate this. I should pimp it on PWO as like a hidden gem because it was wrestled in a very un-WWF-like style. I love the German suplex that Kaniski gave Thornton to
he
win. That was
good.
Awesome.
I kind of wish, that was a great move. And I you know, we mentioned it, that I wish he kind of stuck around. I think he could have maybe helped bolster the midcard. I think he had some talent.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his story is, actually. I know he wrestles for a while in WWF, but not too long. And I also want to remark about the referee with the finish where he totally botched it, because I guess he first he counted Kaniski
not even getting pinned.
For a pin when there wasn't nobody
yeah, we got into that
covered, right? And then he hesitated on the three count because I don't think he knew it was supposed to be the finish or whatever.
It was brutal.
So more referee incompetence at Madison Square Garden. That's a ongoing theme for us, and yeah, I give it 1 star.
Okay. Yeah, I went star and a half. Scott went 1. And then Jake Siviafi, we just talked about. I actually went, Scott and I both went 2 stars on this one. Kelly, you have any quick thoughts on that match?
Yeah, I liked it a little bit more than you guys. I went 2.5 stars because basically, awesome. You know, I thought it was a Jake Roberts masterpiece performance. Just working with, you know, it was the broomstick match for him, getting the fans to care about Siviafi, who really they don't and haven't over the months. Robert's got a lot of cheers, so we're going to see. I mean, it's not too long now before he's turned.
Right. And Gorilla even calls it out. Gorilla mentions it.
Yeah. I mean, because he was a cool heel. He had the DDT was a super cool move. He was winning all his matches, so the fans started to go for him. And I think we're also into the period now where heel, you know, the fans are like, there's more heel fans developing, especially in the Northeast. In crowds. This was something Marty and I noticed on Tag Teams Back In, my old podcast, where we're going over the same time frame. And you could see that with each passing month, the crowds became more and more sympathetic to the heels, it seemed.
Yeah.
Jake just, you know, this was a great performance. He had the crowd in the palm of his hands. I really like this. I'd never seen this before. And a lot of people, you know, don't give Jake the credit he deserves for being a in-ring worker. And I think this is a good match to point to show how he can carry somebody to a good match. And the crowd was in it all the way. So yeah, 2.5 stars.
All right. Very good. Very good. All right. Let's get to our next match. And that is a
who would have thought any of the three of us would have given a Siviafi match 2.5 stars?
Hey, he's improved. He's working hard. He's getting there.
I know. I'm just saying a year ago, we have said anything about it.
No, the first few matches he had were beyond horrible. But yeah, he's been in like the 2-star range the last 3 or so matches.
He's getting there, and a lot of the shows in the 2-star ranges we'll talk about. So, big power match here on deck as Billy Jack Haynes back this month taking on old Hercules. Herc is again, of course, shows some gradual month to month improvement, very much like Siviafi. We'll see if it continues. Haynes, of course, had a shaky MSG debut last month, gets a crack here. Herc now co-managed, like we mentioned, by Blassie and Slick, who had recently debuted. Kelly, you want to give any kind of background on Slick pre-WWF? Do you have anything on hand?
All I know is he was in Central States, Kansas City before this, and managed the Warlord there. I know I've seen footage of that. And I think he managed even Hercules there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
they sort of came over together, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And
Butch Reed, isn't he tied in with him too from there?
Oh, that's who he was managing. Butch Reed, not Hercules. Yeah, Butch Reed in Central States.
Yeah, him and Reed were forced out when they lost a loser leaves town match to Bruiser Brody. Then Slick comes in, and then eventually Reed would come in as well. But yep, so pretty much just Kansas City in here for him. So there you go, Slickster. And
how often does Bruiser Brody? How often does Bruiser Brody actually win loser leave town? Usually he's the one that's leaving and going somewhere.
No, I know, right?
It's not often that he actually sticks around somewhere.
good old Central States. So, co-manager here, both guys come out. Slick is with Blassie, and they're kind of doing the slower transition where Blassie's kind of shown as like maybe, I guess, I don't know, kind of the overseer, and Slick is the active manager because he stays at ringside. Blassie leaves. So there, you can tell they're slowly transitioning Blassie out and going to give him all six guys, but they slowly do it here. They're working them in. So Slick chats up Herc before the match. Gorilla says he has a dubious background, and he mentions ladies of the evening. And Al says he's shrewd and has a certain look about him. So there you go. Good old ladies, casual racism. We start with a lockup and some feeling out. Al says this is a real test as both are on winning streaks. Herc confers with Slick after a stalemate and dodges a Haynes charge with levels him with a flying clothesline. Herc slams Billy Jack down and goes to work on his power arsenal. Billy Jack makes a quick comeback with a big press slam and a flurry that drives Hercules to the floor to regroup with Slick. Herc comes back in and the two hosses trade blows before Billy Jack lands an atomic drop and a pair of drop kicks into a chin lock. Slick pops in on commentary and confirms that Blassie went to the back and he's in charge out here. Billy Jack twists into a tight side headlock and then takes Herc down with a back suplex, but Billy Jack keeps the hold on, rolls through and clamps on tighter. Herc finally breaks the hold and slings Billy Jack to the floor, where he cracks the edge of the announce table. Billy Jack is slow to get up, but Herc comes out and slugs away before whipping him hard into the barricade. Herc follows that up by smashing Billy Jack in the face with the edge of a chair and slides in the ring and celebrates. Billy Jack finally gets back in and as Gorilla rips Herc for wasting time. Herc locks in a bear hug, but Billy Jack punches free and slugs away, wiping Herc out with a big right hand. Herc battles back and took Billy Jack over with a nice suplex, but Billy Jack blocks a second attempt and got one of his own. Billy Jack heads to the second rope and comes up empty on a splash as Gorilla is shocked this has gone as long as it has. Herc and Billy Jack both charge and collide head-to-head, taking both men out. Billy Jack grabs control as they get to their feet, leg-dropping Herc's groin and striking from there. Herc comes back with a desperation low blow as Gorilla just yells at the ref for allowing that. Herc clubs away and gets some more in a back suplex for two as things are just dragging now a little bit. Herc wrecks Billy Jack with another clothesline for two and methodically works through him with some offense. And you can tell that we're heading towards a draw now at this point, especially over the last couple minutes. And that's where we hit. So Billy Jack demands five more minutes. The ref complies, and we actually fire back up with Herc picking up where we left off, working over Billy Jack. We get another collision. Billy Jack fires up and hammers away to a pop and the surprise of the announcers. He goes for a full Nelson, but Herc blocks it, and Slick yanks him to the floor and take a count-out loss. Surprisingly fun power match here, filled with some heavy bombs, lots of ebb and flow. Herc had some nice agility spots too, like that leaping clothesline. Good chemistry. I thought this was a good even match. The extra time actually got the card in a little bit hotter too, especially the finish. So I thought that was cool. Herc has improved quite a bit since his debut, and Billy Jack looked better here than last month. And I went 2 stars on this one too. Surprisingly fun. I mean, definitely long. You'd be surprised these are the two guys they chose to go long. But I thought it was a good, showcase for Billy Jack and Hercules to see where they've improved, what kind of match they can put together. And I thought they did a pretty good job, Kelly.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't expecting a lot out of this. I was all over Billy Jerk or Jack Haynes last episode, yeah. And I was kind of prepared to continue. But no, he was over in this one. The crowd gave him a big pop at the beginning, and there was sustained heat throughout. So this is the first chapter in what would be like a very long WWF feud. And the prologue was actually in Florida. They wrestled there. And I think they may have even wrestled in World Class also. So it makes sense that they went with them here because obviously they had some chemistry together. And yeah, you got to go with it. And it's a good matchup, good power. Like they're very similar in size and then both work the power spots and stuff. So yeah, interesting. Here we go. And you mentioned the stuff about Slick and Blassie. I think it's smart to phase Blassie out slowly and bring Slick in to give him the rub because he was taking over all of Blassie's clients. So that was well done. And yeah, good brawling in this on the outside. And yeah, I mean, it was definitely a little on the long side. I don't think we needed. Well, I mean, we always get the almost one 20-minute draw per show. And it just seemed like in this match, and then there'd be a few other matches where they were just killing time. And so the crowd definitely lost interest near the end, where they were sort of just meandering about. The extra 5 minutes thing was interesting, but it also added some confusion to the finish, where Monsoon didn't seem to know whether it was like a real extra 5 minutes.
Right, it was a brawl.
Getting on the ref for actually counting out Hercules. But yeah, that was a good finish because, you know, these guys are far from done. And I went 2 stars on it.
Yeah, I gave it 2 stars as well. Your official time, 21:29. That's all told after the draw and then the other stuff afterwards. Obviously, Freddie is getting up there in years, so it was time for him to, you know, he probably said, time for me to retire, and we need a new heel manager, so you bring in the Slickster. Only Alfred, I mean, Gorilla kind of surprised me, but Alfred kind of alluding that he made his business with Who is not a total shock, but the fact that Gorilla fucking alluded to it was even funnier.
He has a certain look about him, like he pimps out women for sexual activity.
Yeah, he's got a harem of Jezebels.
Yes, who he beats.
I dug the match. I'll tell you why. I thought they were really stiff together. I thought that they, really laid into each other pretty good. Like you wish that the matches later on down the line, we won't allude to now, but were like this. They really hit the crap out of each other. I really liked it in that aspect. I think, and Billy Jack, this might be one of the better Billy Jack matches. Mm-hmm. I feel like he kind of adjusted to the WWF style, and Herc was a good foil for him. And they just, I mean, they're two similar guys, two power guys who throw bombs, and it worked good. I thought it worked fine. Now, did they have to go 21 and a half minutes? Obviously not. Maybe they could have given another match more time, but that's fine. I'm not going to, obviously it had to be done, and that's fine. No problem with it. I think they'll get better, but then I also think they regress. Like I wish that every match that these two have, and they obviously will have quite a bit, from here on out, are like this, because I thought this was a lot of fun to watch. I enjoy the bomb throwing, and
it's been encouraging too.
You know, I just thought it was paced well,
and it's been encouraging too to see Herc improve. I mean, he was really bad that first match, and ever since then he's come around. Like I think he's been pretty good in a lot of these matches. He's worked well.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and I think he, the ending was a little stupid, but that's fine. But I liked it. I thought it was a great power battle. I think one of the better power matches we've seen lately in the company, here at the Garden. I agree with you, JR. I think this is one of Herc's better matches. We've seen him a few times. I mean, he's had to face some real dreck. Not that he's a work rate marvel or anything, but Billy Jack, I think, really meshed with him well and kind of motivated him to put on a good power match. So, and that's what they did. So there you go. 21:29, all told. And 2 stars all around. Kelly, you gave it 2 stars too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so 2 stars all around.
All right, let's go to our next match.
21 and a half minute power match. But,
right, much better than you would
expect.
Speaking
of power, we get a good one here.
Yeah. So next up we have Paul Orndorff, the recently turned heel Paul Orndorff. We're going to talk about that because the heat was off the charts. And he is battling Corporal Kirchner, who's flying high, as always. The Corporal has all his pomp. Still gets his music and his flag, and he's marching out. Orndorff has officially gone heel again, having turned his back on Hulk Hogan, taking on Bobby Heenan as a manager. We saw that all go down, of course, on TV, and it was overdue. I think he had run its course as a face, and they did it just to the right point where it was a good, solid turn that made a lot of sense. They didn't wait too long. They didn't pull the trigger too soon. Al, as always, says Kirchner's sky high with emotion, with an emphasis on high. So Al definitely is trying to tell us that Kirchner has some sort of drug problem. I mean, that is clear, right? He says it almost every time. So something's going on. Orndorff and Heenan enter to Real American as they're trolling the Hulkster, and that surprises Gorilla and Al. We get lots of stalling by Orndorff before the bell, and the crowd is just super hot. all over him with booze. Just pouring all over him. Gorilla rips Orndorff for his recent actions. We start with a lockup and get some more stalling until Orndorff lands a cheap shot and starts in with some aggressive strikes. Heenan shows up on commentary, says Real American was written exclusively for Orndorff. Kirshner makes a quick comeback that levels Paul with a dropkick to send him to the floor, and the crowd heats fantastic here as the fans are just hating on him. He returns, we go to a test of strength, but Orndorff eventually wins to get a suplex to take over. Follows with some knee drops and a rear chin lock. The corporal breaks free and lands a shot, but Orndorff cuts him down and lays in more strikes as Gorilla talks about Paul's actions and sounds sad that Paul felt he had to take this way to the top. Kirchner ducks a back elbow and gets a cross body block for two. Orndorff recovers and slings Kirchner to the floor. Al says that Orndorff has an unblemished record in singles bouts. Orndorff comes outside and hot shots Kirchner to the barricade, and back inside, Kirchner dodges a dropkick and hammers away with fists and elbows and an atomic drop. The corporal heads up top but comes up empty on a leap. Heenan calls for the pile driver, and Orndorff obliges, spiking Kirchner hard to the mat for the win. Serviceable, but to me it got a bump in the grade just due to the heat and that sick pile driver sell by Kirchner. The heat is just amazing. The crowd never stopped the whole match. Kirchner was game. He hung in the best he could, showed off some nice selling, and it felt like a big deal with Orndorff. I mean, this felt like a star. Like, it felt like Brock Lesnar showing up, at, you know, for at least once a six-month match or something. To me, like, it was like, holy shit, they were just crazy for him. And just a great snapshot of Orndorff, his absolute heel peak. And I went 2 stars on this, and I don't think it was 2 stars for the match, but the heat to me was so enjoyable. And Orndorff just soaking it in and pounding on Kirchner. And Kirchner, you know, fighting, but the corporal just puts him down for good. I mean, Orndorff just puts him down for good with the pile driver and just soaks in all the heat. I loved watching this match. I thought it was so much fun, and Orndorff's heel turn is off to a tremendous start, Scott.
Yeah, 9:42 your official time. He was awesome. Once again, we continue to talk about it throughout this calendar year. 1986 is an incredible year for heels, and he's just fucking great. Not just for having Bobby back, or having Bobby and trolling. I mean, the Real American, that's kind of revolutionary. Having Orndorff come into Hogan's music. I mean, I'm surprised they even did that, and that makes it even more awesome in my opinion. I mean, he was just great. I mean, he's just a better heel. He's just a better heel. He's better at it. And he was awesome. And Kirchner's just, I think we all know what where he is now. I wonder if right now CV Afi has a better standing in the company right now than Kirchner does. He's just cooked, literally, as Alfred would tell you. Now, most of the 9:42 was kind of Orndorff yucking up the crowd, and that's fine. That's really all we needed. We didn't need much work rate. We were just, you know, eventually seeing Kirchner lose. I think it was more Orndorff really firing the crowd up, which – and a pretty good crowd tonight, actually. Very good Garden crowd tonight, I have to say. And they were just getting fired up, and they were tremendous, and they really carried the match along. This was one of the best heel turns in the early Federation era. It was just fantastic. He's just a better heel.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. And I like that Alfred kind of – you know what, though? Alfred, as much as he says dopey things, there's certain instances where you really like him in certain roles. Like, he actually questioned Hogan's methods during that Orndorff friendship, which adds something to the commentary. Do you guys remember? I mean, he actually asks Gorilla, who, of course, you know, answered it blankly. You know, Alfred goes, do you really think Hogan put everything into that tag team? Do you really think he did?
Right.
And Gorilla's like, well, of course he did. He's a hoaxer. You know, but I kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that Alfred actually questioned that.
Right, yeah. Did he drive Orndorff to turn, basically? You know.
Yeah. Was Adrian Adonis right?
Right.
On all those flower shops, you know? I mean, obviously, you're going to lean towards the heel, obviously, but are leaning, you know, towards Hogan. But still, it's okay to have that. You know, you're a little more mature now, and maybe you don't think about it as much back then when you're 13 or 14 or whatever. But now you're like, you know, I kind of dig Alfred for doing that. And he does it throughout this show. He, you know, you kind of got to have a little bit of a heel foil. And now Alfred won't go full heel, but he compliments Bobby during this match. He compliments Bobby during the next match, too. So there's once in a while, as much as he says some weird things like supple, Alfred really kind of hits the pulse of the other side of your thinking when it comes to feuds. And when he said, you know, did Hogan really, I mean, look, he's world champion. He's the greatest of all time. You know, he's greatest in the world right now. Did he really give a shit about this guy and his tag team? And what's Gorilla going to say? No, Gorilla's got to toe the babyface line. Well, of course he did. He's the Hulkster. And, you know, and I mean, if Alfred wanted to, you know, push the issue, he could have. But back then, you don't really do anything like that. You ask the question and then move on to something else. But anyway, I really wanted to point that out about Alfred because he really hit me when he did that. Like, you know what? That's actually pretty good, a pretty good back and forth, pretty good analysis and commentary that you may not think about in 1986 WWF, you know? But I liked the match. I gave it 2 stars. I thought a lot of it was Orndorff's posturing to the crowd and really yucking it up and getting the heel thing going. So I think we're on the way to a good feud. I think Orndorff is, you know, is set up right now for good things. What do you think, Cal?
Yeah, I like this one as well. I mean, watching this match, it really hit me like with memories of, because August 1986 is basically when I first started watching WWF every week. I got into WWF around WrestleMania 2, but I didn't start watching the TV regularly until August. And, you know, I just remembered, like, this whole card basically, you know, just filled me with memories of those first few weeks. And this was, when Orndorff turned on Hogan. I just missed that, I guess, because when I first started watching regularly, this was, the feud was in, you know, full force. And yeah, I just remembered how hot Orndorff was as a heel. You know, people at school were talking about this, like the turn got over so huge. And it's really impressive to consider at the beginning of 1986, Orndorff was as hot a babyface as he is as a heel in August 1986. So within the same calendar year, he was red hot as both a face and a heel. It's a pretty impressive accomplishment, and it speaks for the talents of Orndorff. And this match was similar to the Robert Zaffy match, where it's a heel, master heel, just taking a guy, you know, another one of the copy clone guys that we don't like, and making the crowd actually care about him. And JR, you went on and on about the heat. It was just, this was like, because they hadn't had their first big match yet, so this was just on the cusp, and the turn was fresh, and it was just really, really over. And so this was like really cool to see this, and the crowd's response to the whole thing, and the pile driver, was awesome. I mean, I'm a big fan of a Bob Backlund pile driver, but Paul Orndorff's pile driver is probably the best when he really hits it. And yeah, great sell by Kirshner. And I also went 2 stars with this match.
All right. Very good. Very good. So we're in interesting pacing here on this show where, again, nothing's like, you know, shattering earthly records when it comes to wrestling, but everything's been pretty good. And for an MSG house show in 1986, just, you know, getting pretty good stuff is a win most of the time. Mm-hmm. All right. So next up, we have a big debut of a tag team, a 6-man team, much like us guys. And that is the Machines taking on Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy. And of course the Machines are making their MSG debut on this show. And, looking at them, of course, made up of 3 members. In 1986 of April, Jack Tunney suspended Andre the Giant for failing to compete in a tag team match against John Studd and King Kong Bundy at the petitioning of Bobby Heenan. In reality, Andre was competing in Japan and finishing filming of The Princess Bride. 2 months later, vignettes began airing, promising the debut of a new tag team known as the Machines, managed by Lou Albano. Who else? In their promos, they vowed to prove they were the greatest tag team in the world. And, of course, it was very obvious that the Giant Machine was Andre under the hood. Announcers intimated, though, it could be other people, like Japan's Giant Baba. Heenan began campaigning and claiming that Andre was under the mask and trying to circumvent the suspension. Tunney vowed that if it were indeed Andre, then he would be permanently suspended. On August 23rd, the Machines made their TV debut with the Super Machine wrestling in a singles match while Giant watched from outside and Bobby Heenan sneaking around and taking photos to prove his point. Shortly after, injuries force Andre to the sideline, so Albano introduced Big Machine, a third member of the group portrayed by Blackjack Mulligan. Of course, who was Robert Windham, a standout college football star, decided to get into wrestling after a cup of coffee with the NFL. He began training in Texas before making his debut in 1967. Over the next two decades, he competed across the country. He was stints in the AWA, NWA, and WWF, donning the heel persona of Blackjack Mulligan. He won gold wherever he went and became a viable star, and he would settle in with the WWF in the mid-1980s and was used as Big Machine when Andre is sidelined with injuries. And, of course, finally, Bill Eadie began wrestling back in 1973 in the Detroit territory shortly after beginning his career. Eadie donned a hood and became known as the Masked Superstar, began touring the country with successful stops in the NWA, Georgia, and WWF through 1986, where he signed an official contract with New York, maintained his infamous mask, but was now known as Super Machine. Kelly, before we get to the match, any thoughts on the careers to this point of Blackjack Mulligan and Bill Eadie?
Well, I mean, Mulligan by this time was way past his prime. But in the 70s, he was a huge heel star, mostly in the South Carolinas. I mean, in the Carolinas, he was a legend. Mm-hmm. Had a big feud. Well, first he was in a team with Ric Flair, and then they had a big feud that is still talked about to this day in that part of the country, I know. And by the time the 80s roll around, I mean, we watched him on Titans. He had a feud with Andre in 82. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't great either. He definitely slows down. And then some of his appearances in around 1985, you know, weren't easy to watch. But no, a legend at his peak. He was really good. Unfortunately, most of the time, he was at a time when there's not a lot of footage to judge. So we missed out on his peak of his career. Mask Superstar, I love. You know, I'm big on the Mask guys, and he was one of the best all time as the heel. You know, who his gimmick was that he was a great athlete, and he was always, you know, the hint that he was actually a famous athlete. You know, but he was moonlighting under a mask for whatever reason, because he liked the competition or whatever. But he played it, you know, his promos were great. He was very articulate, came off very smart. And yeah, as we'll see in this match, he was definitely the workhorse of the group of all the wrestlers. Yeah, I'm a big Bill Eadie fan. And yeah, Superstar, Mass Superstar was great.
All right, well, a new face three-man team here in the mix. After weeks of vignettes from Japan, instantly pushed to a high-level feud with Stud and Bundy. The crowd buzzing for this battle of the behemoths. The Machines have some unique theme music, I found was interesting. But for some reason, they're not let out by Albano, who, of course, found them in Japan. And he's announced by Fink. And we see him later, but he's not here for whatever reason. Gorilla and Al talk about how Bundy and Sutter caught off guard by a giant machine being in the mix and blame Bobby for not paying attention to the contract he signed. Gorilla says he looks like Andre, but he wouldn't bet his money on it. Super and Stud start off with some feeling out, but Super smacks him and nearly gets him up for a slam. Gorilla talks about all the people that Stud owes money to for these slams. Stud plants Super with a shoulder block, but a second one fails, and now Super barrels into him with three clotheslines that send him to the floor. Giant Machine hammers away at Stud outside and pitches him back in, where Big Machine meets him with a slam attempt. Bundy tags in, and we get some standoffs on a pair of shoulder blocks to a pop, and Big Machine fires away. Bundy whiffs on an avalanche and gets dropped by an elbow, and Bundy slugs back at him, tags in Stud, but Big kicks him in the gut and tags in Super, who comes in hot. Stud cuts him off with a kick and tags in Bundy, who works over Super with his power offense. We get some miscommunication between Bundy and Stud that leads to an argument, and eventually peace is made. Big gets caught in the corner and worked over a bit as the crowd rallies him until Bundy misses a splash. Suddenly, Giant gets on the apron, and he gets tagged in, which I guess they're allowing. The crowd is going nuts as Giant chokes Bundy and chops away. Stud comes in, and Giant gets used as a battering ram into both men. Everything breaks down as all three machines are popping in and out of the ring now. The referee just has no clue what the fuck's going on. We get a double clothesline. Giant covers Stud for the win, but Gorilla thinks this was a DQ and not a pin, but he has no idea what's going on. Giant batters Stud to a pop after the bell. Stud just keeps coming back for more, as we've seen before with him, but he keeps getting beaten on. Eventually, he leaves, and the Machines celebrate, even though they were indeed DQ'd. Fine match until the screwy ending. The crowd is really into the Machines and the story. Heenan and his crew were selling. It was tremendous. Fun atmosphere. I really liked the gimmick and the idea. I thought it was unique storytelling. They didn't really showcase a lot at this time. I thought they kind of went outside the box on this one. I went 2.5. I enjoyed this whole package. What'd you think, Kel?
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. The Machines were super over, so the whole angle worked. It looks, you know, it's kind of hokey. Even, you know, Super Machine, it's obvious that it's mass superstar Bill Eady just by the way he does certain things in the ring, his offense. But, you know, it's obviously Andre the Giant. But anyway, no, it all worked. And like I mentioned earlier, Super Machine, Eady was the workhorse of the match, going, you know, he's moving really quick and his offense looked great. And yeah, I like the tease of the dissension between Stud and Bundy. We haven't seen that before, I don't think. That popped the crowd. And I wonder if that's something that they may have worked towards if Stud had stuck around instead of leaving. And then when we get the Giant Machine in the ring, this was surprising. Like, I didn't, you know that he was eligible to take a tag. And,
yeah, so weird.
I'm not sure if he really was either. It seems like the whole finish gets really convoluted. But anyways, it was cool when Giant Machine tagged in, because I was like, whoa, now he's in the ring. Big surprise, huge pop. He comes in and attacks Bundy. But then things totally fell apart because, yeah, you know, Giant Machine Andre at this time was getting pretty broken down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the finishing sequence, you know, just looked horrible, where Andre couldn't really do what he was supposed to do. Gets an awkward pin on Stud, and then, or was it? I mean, then the bell rings, and apparently the story is that the ref didn't realize that this was Giant Machine. He thought it was super or big or whatever. And then finally he realized it just as he was counting the pin that this is a different guy. So
his referees have been atrocious. My God, they're bad. I mean, they fuck everything up. It's like show to show. There's at least one or two mess ups a show. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot. I think this was what they were going for, though, was that the referee was supposed to be fooled.
I get you.
By it, even though Andre suddenly being in the ring is not fooling anybody.
Right.
Obviously, like, he's obviously like much bigger than even Big Machine.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But that was how they played, because then they disqualify the machines for Giant Machine getting involved. So that the whole finish could have been done way better. But well, anyway,
and the announcers never seemed clued in either. You know what I mean?
No, like, it's true.
They're just lost as well. So it just ends up just being mass chaos.
Yeah, I wonder how things worked back then. Like, how much did Monsoon and Hayes know going in? Like, I guess they probably knew the finish or who was going to win,
right,
but probably not how it was going to turn out or how the finish was going to go down. Because, yeah, there's a lot of confusion, miscommunication, just, yeah. I don't know, was Vince McMahon at all these cards? It seems like maybe, you know, if Vince was behind the scenes running things, you shouldn't have this amount of confusion top to bottom, but whatever. The whole spectacle was pretty fun, though. So I went 2.5 stars, like the extra half star just for the atmosphere and Giant Machine getting involved, which I didn't expect to happen. So that was a genuine surprise on my part, and that's cool. Yeah.
I also gave it 2.5 stars. What the hell was that? Was that theme? That's some kind of imported cassette or something that was found on the floor. I mean,
yeah,
that was terrible.
Like, ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding. It was terrible. No clue what that was. Your match time 9:07. I mean, let's be honest, guys. A fucking idiot knows that's Andre. So it's funny that we're all in on the joke and nobody else is.
Right.
You know, it's like only Gorilla, Alfred, and apparently the ref.
Have no clue.
And Jack Tunney are not in on it. It's like the stupidest thing. I know, JR, you had said that it's still a good storyline hook. I think you had said it a couple of shows ago, but I think the $15,000 slam thing needs to go. It's a fucking joke now.
Well, see, but I think it's making him a better heel, because it's like, you know, he just keeps acting like no one's ever slammed him and he's not paying anyone, but it's still there because it's just their heels. Oh, so I haven't been slammed. Good luck. You know, I don't mind it. I still think it's a good heel work.
I mean, it's good heel work, but I mean, I don't know. I just feel like it's so fried.
The heat with it now is that he's not paying these guys off.
Yeah. And now, so before he was a Yeah, exactly. Now he's just, you know, before he was just this massive giant who can't be slammed. Now he's just a welcher. it's like a different tact. But I see your point, JR, that it's at least still something heelish. But I don't know. I liked it when he was actually kind of indomitable. Now he's just a skin flint. But crowd's nuclear. And I've said that. I said it before. The crowd's great tonight. But the match is a fucking mess in some ways. I mean, most of the 2.5, I think, is the crowd. And just the, you know, Bobby's mannerisms. The in-ring wasn't bad, but I understand, Kelly, I think you were saying it about, you know, the ref's supposed to be confused, but I mean, they're awful. I think it's the same ref. I think it was the same guy that did that weird, you know, no-pin in the opener. I mean, he must not be a regular ref, because he's fucking clueless. I had no idea what's going on. And, you know, putting over the machines is one thing, but to just be a complete moron is something totally different. You know, I mean, these refs have been just mm-hmm. atrocious. And like I said earlier, Kel, I don't think you had hopped on yet. I think they're starting to really affect matches now. I really do. It's one thing to have a good match and then the ref just kind of blows something. It's another thing where a match ending that could be a lot better is just utterly bad because a referee just fucks everything up. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Is that they're just blowing stuff left and right and killing match quality, killing it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to see the refs, the old-time commission refs, get slowly phased out and Vince gets like a more uniform crew to, you know, execute his vision and not have these guys that, you know, are not clued in just, you know, bungle things up left and right.
Yeah, because honestly, I think, you know, these commission refs dealt with, I mean, I'm watching these old school MSG house shows in the late 70s, and you didn't have a lot of this stuff going on. So, you know, the refereeing was more straightforward. But now when, you know, obviously Vince in the new era and more storytelling and psychology, and these fucking refs half these guys have no clue what the hell he's doing or what their job is, or they're just completely, you know, mind fucked what they're doing here, to be honest with you. And you got to get the more uniform, you know, refs in here, the Dick Krolls and those guys who at least know how to kind of maneuver their way around here. I mean, these guys are just atrocious. But any event, the match was solid enough. I like the machines. I think they're a cool little team. I still love Stud and Bundy, but I feel like their luster is slowly dulling over time. All this talking about them and all this, we have not seen really a televised match with the Bulldogs yet, and you wonder if you will see it, and I think that's kind of killing their shine. But it's not the end of Bobby's night. Bobby continues. He'll be back later, kind of referring to these gentlemen, because this battle with the machines is far from over. So your match time 9:07, which is pretty decent enough length, and I gave it 2.5 stars, but the ending was just an utter shit show. Why don't we take a break, guys? Been a pretty good first few matches. JR, thoughts so far? I'm highly entertained.
Yeah, no, it's been a good show. We don't have the usual slop in the early part of the card, which bodes well. You know, we've had some good matches. I've really enjoyed the first half of the show.
Mm. What do you think, Kel?
Yeah, me too. What have we got? Like 4 2-star or better matches in a row, which I think is a record for Madison Square Garden. So yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Can't complain.
All right, well, we'll take a break. When we come back, we've got, let's see, 4 matches left, including 2 title matches, and some more storyline advancement involving the match we just talked about. But first, let us go to a break, because.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place Simulations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceMination.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceMination.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceMination.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look at the August 1986 Madison Square Garden House Show. And, of course, each and every week we are here looking at these shows. And, Scott Criscoll, before you know it, we're going to be in Philly for the Royal Rumble. Tickets have been purchased and procured. Mm-hmm. We'll have a crew heading down there. So be sure, if you're going to be taking part of that you you hop in with the crew and grab tickets and or at least come, meet up with us at some point. I'm sure we'll do a meetup as always. These events just keep rolling on, the PTB meetups, one after the other.
They are. Yep.
And
can't wait.
Of course, the kind of the godfather of the tickets for us is D'Amato. He goes in and makes the purchase. And, my kids just started calling him Papa because he's old and he treats them so well. Papa D'Amato. And he was here the other day, though, really kind of giving a heart to the kids, letting them know what was up. And they said, Papa, don't preach. Don't preach to us like that. That was a real forced one. I tried to make it work, but that was a tough one. That was the number one song, though. You hear it playing underneath us right now by Madonna. And that means it is time for Scott Criscoll, another Papa, to come in here and tell us about this week's pop culture report. I guess I got a Papa John joke, maybe. I don't know. Whatever. But Papa John D'Amato. I fucked that all up. That could have been
even
so good.
Did even make Papa John? Papa John. Yeah, D'Amato would have killed you if you compared him to that fucking
puke. Hey, Papa.
Anyway, Papa Don't Preach is your number one song. Of course, the Billboard Top 100 came out. This show is a Monday, so it came out 2 days before on Saturday the 23rd. Papa Don't Preach by Madonna is number one. Number two, The resurging Stevie Winwood. Of course, Stevie Winwood was a young prodigy in the 60s in the Spencer Davis Group, and then a couple hits in the 80s, had some in the 70s, a couple hits in the early 80s, but he really peaked with this album. And Higher Love moved up two spots from last week to number two with Higher Love. Little Bananarama. I'm your Venus. I'm D'Amato, your desire. Little Venus. Come on. Kelly's got a Bananarama poster.
He's got a banana hammock.
Got a banana poster.
So Bananarama at number three with Venus. Number four, little Belinda Carlisle. Hell yeah. Smoke Show indeed with Mad About You as she dumped the Go-Go's and went on her solo tour.
Paul Reiser.
Solo career. At number five, down three spots, great song from a great movie, The Glory of Love by Mr. Peter Cetera from the Karate Kid Part 2 soundtrack and the Karate Kid Part 2 movie, which is exceptional. Number six, a little Lionel Richie, Dancing on the Ceiling, which Kelly does every time the Blue Jays win.
So not often.
Which means he hasn't danced too often. No. At number seven, we talked about Top Gun. Well, this is one of their biggest hits from that movie, Berlin with Take My Breath Away. Number eight, We Don't Have to Take Our Clothes Off by Jermaine Stewart. And number nine, Rumors by The Timex. The Timex Social Club at number nine with Rumors. And at number 10, Wham, still kicking around, although George Michael's pretty much jumped on his solo career, with The Edge of Heaven. So there's your top 10 for that week. That came out Saturday, August 23rd, 1986. And Papa Don't Preach by Madonna is number one. All right, JR. Decided to switch things up a little bit this week, so we're, you know, we don't want to have the show go ridiculously long. Nine movies came out. Wait, let me do that right. Yes, nine movies came out the day that Friday, the 22nd. Five of them made no money. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you the titles of the five movies that made no money. If any of them seem interesting to you,
okay,
go ahead and look it up. Otherwise, we'll dig into the four movies that did make money. All right?
Okay. Yep.
Here we go. The five movies that made squat on this Friday. Corleone, which I don't think was any kind of a Godfather film.
I guess that was in the prequel.
because it would certainly not make no money. Dead End Drive-In. The Peanut Butter Solution.
All right, hang on. I'm
not going on. Oh, I know that one. That's a Canadian movie, actually.
No wonder it made no money.
A family horror fantasy film. Michael Baskin, an average 11-year-old boy, his father Billy Baskin, a struggling artist and temporary sole caregiver of the children, while his wife attends a niece to her recently deceased father in Australia. Upon hearing the news that a man in mansion had recently burned down, Michael and his friend Connie decide to explore the remains, starring Matthew McKay, so Luke Sainasi, and no one else would care about. Was it any good?
I remember, like, the crux of the story is that they go into this haunted house and he sees something so frightening he loses all his hair, the boy. And to make his hair grow back, he comes up with the peanut butter solution. It's like some, I think, ancient Chinese remedy. His from what I remember, his best friend is Chinese. So he ends up putting it on his head, but it works too well. To where it grows, his hair is like, you know, down to his knees, basically. And yeah, that's what I remember most from the movie.
So it's a movie about alopecia, basically.
Yeah.
Well, here's a little fun fact, though. The film features the first English language songs performed by which Canadian star? Do you know?
Tom Cochran.
No.
First, Alanis Morissette.
Oh, you said English song, so it must be Celine Dion.
Very good. I can even cue up the Titanic song. You got it just in time, Scott, for you.
Celine Dion, you silly bitch. Okay. All right. Well, it still made no money. this one that made no money has got D'Amato written all over it. It is called Reform School Girls. Boy.
Was that a Showtime special? And then finally... Special? Did that feature music probably. By Celine Dion as well?
Yes, that feature music by Celine Dion too. And finally, the movie is called Thrashin'.
Let me paint you while you're at reform school.
This takes us back, JR, to like the days of the
407
park bomb,
episodes
cruise.
Ago, I think.
Yeah, 447 episodes ago.
All right. Anyway,
Eastern Caribbean cruise.
All right. That's
So there's your five shitbag movies that made no money. All right, here we go. Our first movie made $591,366. It is a horror movie entitled Night of the Creeps. We've been to a few of those, too.
Speaking of PTB meetups, Night of the Creeps. 1959, on board a spacecraft, two aliens race to keep an experiment from being released by a third member of the crew. They seemingly possess third alien, shoots a canister into space, where it crashes into Earth. Nearby, a college man takes his date to a parking spot where they see a falling star and investigate. Lands on the path of an escaped, criminally insane mental patient. As his date is attacked by an axe-wielding maniac, the boy finds a canister from which a slug-like thing jumps out into his mouth. Starring Jason Lively, Jill Whitlow, Tom Askins, and nobody else.
Okay.
Not that they were anyone either, but go ahead.
I know. All right. Number three, a comedy that made $1.3 million titled Touch and Go.
All right. Speaking of D'Amato, Touch and Go. film. Here we go. God, there's like seven films named Touch and Go. All right. 1986. Bobby Barbato is a pro athlete in ice hockey. As always, expects cheering crowds and beautiful women coming after him. But one day, a gang of youths begin to mug him, but he manages to fend them off and catches the youngest member of the gang, Luis De Leon. He then gives Luis a ride home and meets his mother, an Italian immigrant named Denise. After a fight, Bobby moves on with his life, but he and Denise begin to fall for each other, and Luis becomes close friends with the hockey player. I think the Mighty Ducks is basically formed after this. Starring yes. Michael Keaton, Maria Conchita Alonso, AJ Naidu, Laura Jill Miller, and Cynthia Seipert.
Did you say Michael Keaton was in this?
Yeah, he was Bobby really? Barbato.
I don't remember this whatsoever. All right, our top two movies are both, one is a horror movie, one is a thriller suspense. I thought this would have made a lot more money because this was a long-awaited sequel, but it only made... No, it's not Titanic.
Not the sequel to Titanic. Rise of the Boat. Yes.
Rise of the Boat. $8.025 million, and it was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 13 years after the original that Toby Hooper did in 19... Pretty sure it was 13 years. I think it was 73, if I remember correctly.
By the way, there's only five cast members listed for Touch and Go, and one of them is Second Girl in the Bar. So not a very robust cast for that movie.
She doesn't even get a name.
All right, I don't think we need to talk much about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think everyone knows the deal.
Nah, it's about Leatherface and the chainsaw and the goofy incest family in the middle of the fucking Texas woods and blah, blah, blah. But it was very good, though.
It was a comedy, okay. The second one, basically, with Dennis Hopper.
Yes, and then they did a second sequel, and then they remade it like four times. It was a big fucking mess. Mm-hmm. All right, finally, our biggest movie of the weekend, it made $13,418,091, is a thriller suspense film entitled Titanic 3, Frozen in Ice. No.
Yes.
The movie is called... Well, let's put it this way. Outside the Titanic, all the people lost a lot of these. The movie was called Extremities.
Jesus Christ. I think it was $13
million.
Let's see. Extremities film, 1986, based on a play. Marjorie is a young woman who works in a museum and lives with two female roommates, Pat and Terry, in Los Angeles. Both androgynous, apparently. Pat and Terry.
Yes.
One night while getting into her car, she's attacked at knife point by a masked assailant who forces her to touch him sexually. Marjorie manages to escape, but not before the mugger makes off with her purse. See, I told you purse was involved. She goes to the police, but told there's very little they can do. 1 week later, Marjorie's roommates are at work. Her nightmare comes true as the assailant enters her house, having used her personal information to find out where she lives. Starring Farrah Fawcett, James Russo, Alfre Woodard, Diana Scarwid, Sandy Martin, Tom Everett, Enid Kent. James Avery is a security guard. Uncle Phil. So that's cool.
Uncle Phil, yeah.
That's about it.
I thought you were going to say starring Michael Keaton again. So there's your movies that came out the Friday before August 22nd. All right. Major League Baseball on this Monday. There were 10 games. Mr. Nelson, your Blue Jays had the night off. Mm. And the Yankees lose at home to California 5-3. The Mets win in San Diego 5-2. The standings, the Red Sox lead the AL East by 6 games over the Yankees and the Blue Jays, who had identical 67 and 58 records.
Oh, yes.
The Angels led the AL West by 3 games over Texas. The Mets comfortably ahead in the NL East by 20 games over Philly. And in the West, the Astros led the Giants and Reds by 8 games as we're heading into the tail end of summer into fall. And that is your pop culture report for this evening.
It's a worthless year of baseball. All right, next up, our next match. Well, actually, before we get to our next match, we go backstage for our cavalcade of interviews. This is Gorilla Monsoon, talks to the Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkoff, Freddie Blassie, and Slick. Blassie says they're on their way to the tag team titles. Slick talks about tonight's bout before we get the usual Sheik and Volkoff ranting. Gorilla then chats with Randy Savage about his IC title match tonight. He puts over Pedro Morales and says his IC title is his passport to the world title. He will embarrass a former world champion in Pedro in front of a solid, sold-out crowd and will make Hulk Hogan sit up and take notice. Gorilla talks to the Bulldogs and Lou Albano as well, who's apparently here. They talk about their tough title defense tonight and say they will take on all comers, and he is proud to be their manager. Dynamite and Davey say the Funks will do anything to win, but this will be the biggest fight of their lives, and they won't take the titles away. The biggest fight of their lives. That's how you sell things, Davey and Dynamite. Good job. And I also love Albano, again, with the greatest gymnastic tag team of all time. All right, so that takes us back to the ring for our next bout between Adorable One, Adrian Adonis, and Tony Atlas, who is making his final MSG appearance for 4 years here tonight.
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting run with old Tony. He has shaved his head and looks focused for his big matchup. Jimmy Hart is out with Adonis, who's preening as always. Gorilla and Al talk about Adrian's weight gain and says, well, how's it affecting him yet? It will catch up to him eventually, and he will break down. Jesus. And Gorilla works in a Twinkie joke as well. Gorilla notes that Ace Orton is Adonis' new bodyguard but isn't here tonight and says Piper got angry about it, but Orton said it all came down to money. Adonis works a side headlock, and it goes nowhere. Atlas breaks free and grabs a side headlock of his own as Al talks about a shaved head. Atlas drops Adonis and sends him outside with a shoulder block. Atlas follows out and slugs away and pitches the roly-poly one, as Gorilla calls him, back inside. Atlas grabs a full Nelson and turns into a side headlock. Adonis battles back and kicks away in the corner, but Atlas shoots Adonis' shoulder first into the post and starts to work on the arm. Adonis fights free and pushes Atlas to the corner, but Atlas beels him out and slugs away with more fists and a headbutt. Atlas looks completely gassed here as he figures out his next move, and Jimmy bitches out the ref at ringside. Atlas lands a blow off the middle rope but gets distracted by Jimmy. Atlas leapfrogs Adonis, but Adonis catches him on a second one and drops him with a hot shot for the win. Al says Adonis has made a fool of Atlas, and he looks like an idiot, and he leaves the ring in embarrassment. Really bothering. I don't know if they knew he was leaving or what, but Al just buries him here. Nothing here at all. Atlas looked completely lost. He looked like someone wrestling his first match here, even though he controlled the whole thing. Adonis bumped as usual and stooged before stealing the win. He looked good, but Atlas was terrible, and the commentary was just filled with fat shaming. I mean, just left and right all over this guy about everything, and then just shits all over Tony Atlas when he loses. Not the finest moment of this card, pretty much the nadir of the card, which has been filled with good stuff so far, but this is just nothing. I went dud for this disaster, Scott.
Oh, I'm so happy we won't have to see this fucking guy again for a while. I mean, he's fucking terrible. And you know what? Gorilla and Alpha can make fun of him all he wants, but Adrian Adonis is 10 times a better wrestler than half the fucking losers that he's had to face here at the Garden. You could see that his deal must have been up, and Vince probably told him, we're not renewing your deal. You can go to, and I think he was just playing out his dates, and he looked like he had mailed it in. He honestly did. You were saying he was gassed. I think he just didn't give two shits, to be quite honest with you. I think he threw in the towel, and that's why I think Alfred kind of dogged him at the end, because I think Alfred realized that he was mailing it in and threw shade on him because of it. Adrian Adonis deserved a better match than this, and Tony Atlas just a big fucking useless slug. And he showed it. Mm-hmm. He showed his unprofessionalism at that time. I like Tony. He's a funny guy, and he ends up being a good comedy act over it. He was funny on Legends House, but this is just unprofessional. It's kind of like Tony Garea to what was the match you were talking about where he was – what was Tony Garea being an asshole against?
Harley.
It was Harley, right? Wasn't it a hand job race there? Yeah, same thing. I mean, he fucking – catching on. You could tell he – which is pathetic, but I mean, you could tell he mailed it in. It was evident that he was kind of walking through it, and yeah, maybe I'll fall. Here's a shoulder block, and maybe I'll throw a punch. I mean, he mailed this match in. I'm not even going to – there's nothing else to say about it. It's a dud, Kelly.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I wish Tony Atlas sank in the oven with the Atlas, with the fucking. Okay. Which,
I mean, Atlas. Did anyway. His, I mean,
he's just collecting all the shoes out of the water as the thing clashed.
There you go.
I'll save the high heels.
Atlas had been. I mean, his heart for wrestling had vanished about 2 years earlier for whatever reason. Because he gives about 2 years of phoned-in
lethargic performances, and this is the end. Yeah, he had stopped caring, basically, and he had issues with drugs, and it just combines to you know, have these horrible matches that he's been mostly involved in for the last 2 years. It's sad because he was super over in the early 80s and a pretty good performer when he was motivated. But yeah, so it's about time for him to move on because he just wasn't going anywhere. And yeah, it was, there's nothing much more to say. I mean, it was a guy that didn't care against a guy that, you know, he still cared, but he was starting to sort of lose control of his physique, and it just meshed together for a piece of crap match.
So Alice sticks around through the end of September. So it's not like this was his last match. So I was shocked to hear Alice really went in on him hard in this one. He's an embarrassment. Yeah. He should you know, leave here with his head hanging down. He's what else did he say? He was an idiot. It made him look like a fool and an idiot. Fucking awful. Like
he's a loser.
Shitting all over him. It was rough. It took it rough. But yeah, Tony Atlas, there you go. So it's been interesting. We've seen some good Tony Atlas here and there, maybe at least once or twice. Of course, no longer entitled the Junior Mr. Universe Award, right? It is still. So maybe we'll have to crown a new one since he's gone. But he's had a good run.
Memorial Award now.
We'll see if he wins in his final appearance, if he gets one more under his belt. All right, let's go on to in the ring. Bobby Heenan comes out. Well, Fink is out there, and he talks shit on Lou Albano, saying he outsmarted him with the machines, or he's trying to outsmart him with the machines. And Heenan says next time they're in the garden, he wants all three machines out there, taking on John Studd, King Kong Bundy, and himself. So that gets a big pop. So we'll see where that goes. And then that leads us to our next match as Mike Rotundo and Danny Spivey take on the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff. Big heat on Sheik, Volkoff, Blassie, and Slick. The continued integration of Slick into the stable continues. Sheik and Volkoff still in the tag team mix, despite working as solos as well lately. Volkoff sings the anthem to loud boos that turns to cheers, and Spivey and Rotundo come out with the U.S. flag. Al says a win for Spivey and Rotundo would make them the logical number one contenders for the titles. I don't know what the fuck logic he's using, but it's not accurate. Al says Slick is trying to get out of this match because a loss would nullify a future tag team title shot that they've already lined up. Now we're getting a little confusing. Gorilla puts over the tag division as Rotundo and Sheik opens things up with some feeling out and some basic mat work. Rotundo grabs control and slams Sheik and tags Spivey, who works a side headlock. Gorilla says all of Rotundo's experience has been rubbing off on Danny. Spivey hits an atomic drop and drops a leg to the gut before going to work on the leg. Sheik escapes and tags Volkoff, but Spivey catches him coming in and works him over until missing a charge in the corner. Volkoff goes into his power strike offense, but Spivey makes a comeback and gets a sleeper. Sheik comes in and clobbers him from behind. Nikolai gets some offense in, but Spivey punches his way back in and tags in Rotundo, who hooks an abdominal stretch. Sheik fights free, and Volkoff yanks Rotundo back to the corner and chokes away with a tag rope. Sheik tags in, and then him and Volkoff work some nice heel work, baiting in Rotundo to distract the ref so they can double team. Sheik goes to an abdominal stretch and then takes him over with a nice gut wrench suplex before locking in the camel clutch. The crowd rallies Rotundo until Spivey comes in to save him. Nikolai tags in, and Rotundo gets a desperation sunset flip, but the ref is tied up with Sheik. Nikolai maintains control and gets his press slam backbreaker for two, but Gorilla and Al rip on the execution. After some more heel double teams, Nikolai spikes Rotundo across the top with a hard hot shot and tags Sheik. Rotundo blocks a suplex and gets one of his own and makes a tag to a big pop. Spivey cleans house and gets the bulldog on Sheik, but Nikolai makes a save. Things break down, and the referee gets tied up with Rotundo, allowing Nikolai to use the cane on Spivey, and Sheik covers for the win. The referee was all twisted around here again, fucking up, and he's basically looking at the cane as they're hitting him with it. Solid tag match from good heat and work by all four men. Volkoff was sloppy as usual, but effective enough. Spivey's coming around thanks to the team. There's some potential there if they keep working together, I think. Big win for Sheik and Volkoff as they continue to linger as a team. I went with another two-star match here, Kelly.
I didn't quite hit that high. I don't like the fake U.S. Express at all, especially Danny Spivey. I don't know what it is about him. I just can't stand him. No Born in the USA for the boys at all. No heat at all. Sheik and Volkoff have basically spent the whole year wrestling, you know, copies of wrestlers that they had hot feuds with in previous years. You know, they went a long time with Corporal Kirshner, and now they're onto the U.S. Express. They're just, you know, they just don't seem to have anything fresh going for him. And they just feel stale, Sheik and Volkov in general at this point, a little bit. Yeah. And yeah, the crowd was, they eventually got hot. And Rotundo did actually work quite well as the face in peril in this. He was definitely the star of the team. Spivey's House of Fire was okay, and the crowd was behind that. And then we have the finish, which is also a copy of the U.S. Express, the original U.S. Express, losing to Sheik and Volkov at WrestleMania. So even the finish is a copy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then kind of a nice touch.
With the cane. I guess you could say nice touch or just, you know,
lazy.
Lack of, yeah. of lazy, lack of originality. Just
let's think optimistically here. Come on.
I think it's just laziness, pure laziness.
Yeah, we're right down to hitting the blonde guy, right? Because they pinned Wyndham at WrestleMania 1.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Like they're just
look out there, Nick Kaniski.
Yeah, yeah. Just devoid of originality here for Sheik and Volkov. I went 1.5 stars because a lot of the work was well done. Mm-hmm. But yeah, overall, I couldn't rate it as high as some of the other classics from tonight.
I actually gave it 2.5. I liked it a lot, actually.
Jeez.
Speaking of Nikolai Volkov, that is, according to Graham Cawthon in the history of WWE.com, that is Tony Atlas's final opponent.
Yes.
He faces Nikolai on September 30th at the Brown County Arena in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And then that's it for Tony. I always like the chic three-quarter tights that say Iran down the sides. He never really wore those nearly enough. I wish he wore them more.
The other side should have said so far away.
But Sheik didn't have any hair to yes. to gel into a goalpost. But I liked the match. And I liked that that the heels won here because it just shows who's sticking around and who's more important. I agree with you, Kelly. I mean, I have nothing against Spivey, nothing at all, but he's just not Barry Windham. And that, I mean, it's nobody's fault. I mean, you know, Rotundo's got to work his dates out before he leaves. So it's fine to give him another, you know, to do another team like this. So I don't blame anybody for it, but Spivey's just not Barry Windham. You know, he's a decent worker in the ring. He's got the blonde hair, but he's just not Barry Windham. So it was good that Sheik and Volkov won. It kind of gives him a little extra oomph to move up the tag ranks. We actually kind of thought that they were, you know, reaching the end of the line, but maybe they're not. You know, maybe they're you know, getting back together. We don't know at this point. So your official time, by the way, the Atlas Adonis match, I don't think I said it earlier, was 7:20. This match was 12:46. I thought it was really good. I liked it. It's funny that I'm saying that I liked it and I'm kind of digging on Spivey, but I'm not. I mean, Spivey's a good worker. He's not Barry Windham, but he doesn't suck, I don't think. And, you know, you got Mike Rotundo, who's always awesome, so he kind of can hide some
Scotty's
of Spivey's.
Scotty's crushing on Spivey.
Yeah.
I wish you went back
to
the
Fuzzy Boots. I got a crush on you.
I got a crush on you. I think we already went through the Jets song.
Okay, we could play a little Kevin on the way out then. A little C's.
I thought you were going to play the Titanic song again. Me and Starship Rocket or whatever the fuck his name was in NWA. I mean, it's fine. It was a good match. I'm glad Sheik and Volkov won, but I think Spivey gets... We know he's not Barry Windham, but I don't think he's as bad as you know, it seems. Now, again, Mike Rotundo probably makes him look a little bit better because he's just that good. But so, yeah, I give it 2.5. I liked it. And now, JR, we come to our final two matches of the evening, both championship matches. First up?
Is our Intercontinental titles on the line. It's Pedro Morales, the former IC champ, former Triple Crown winner, taking on the not-so-macho man, Randy Savage. Interesting IC title match here. Pedro's picked up some wins of late, putting him into the spot. Savage keeps battling month after month, escaping with the strap. Savage and Liz with their big star power entrance. As always, Gorilla says there's a lot of pro-Savage signs in the crowd, as Al puts over his record. So again, Gorilla big tonight, saying how the heels are getting cheered. Gorilla says he still hides behind Liz, and that's what bothers him, but Al says she's part of the conspiracy. Morales dominates early, slamming Savage hard to the mat and sending him flailing to the floor. Savage comes back in, but Pedro slugs away. Savage dips in his tights and pulls out an object that he uses to rake the eyes to take control. Pedro gets knocked outside, and Savage follows out and hammers away and drills him with a double axe blow off the top. Savage suplexes Pedro back in for a close near fall, and then Savage tries for an axe off the top, but Pedro catches him with a hard shot to the gut that sends the champ to the floor. He slowly climbs back in, where Pedro meets him with right hands and gets a near fall, and then follows with a small package for another two count. They fight over a backslide, but Pedro gets it for two. Pedro knocks Savage to the floor with his right hand, and after a tussle with the chair, Pedro rolls back in and wins by countout. Fun little sprint, but I did not like the finish. I did like the format for Pedro. Got some good fire spots, sold for Savage. Savage is awesome as always and escapes again. Good use for Pedro, but I really think you should have laid down here. I mean, unless they're setting up for a rematch, which I guess, you know, I may just haven't looked ahead. Maybe it's possible, but either have Pedro lose by countout or just lay down. I don't see the point of having Savage lose to this guy at this point. I went 2.5, though. I really like this. For being a quick, short sprint, I thought they got a lot out of it. What did you think of this one, Scott?
Your match time 7:19.
Yeah.
I think Kelly, you and Saros and Parv, you guys are probably gonna lose your shit when I'm about to tell you. But I actually gave this 3 stars. This match was tremendous. I just love the storytelling, and I think Pedro really just needed a motivator. Now, again, we qualify it as Savage who makes everybody look good, but you know Pedro's a veteran guy, and if he can get his if he could get his act together in the ring. Get back into the way that made him the Triple Crown champion. He could get some good matches, and I thought the storytelling here was great. And I thought the crowd was hot. They remember Pedro as former champion, so I feel like they gave him legitimacy. And I thought it was a great story. I think it told a great story. I think Savage got it going in the interview earlier when he kind of put Pedro over. He said, "I don't care about the other belts. I'm facing a former world heavyweight champion tonight." You know, I think he put him over in the interview, which I think subliminally or mentally actually made the match better, you know, and I thought it was really good. I thought it was a good back and forth.
No, I would say it's probably Pedro's best match that we've seen.
Oh yeah, easily.
And there's and
except for that weird one. Was it Mike Sharp? The weird good one, like out of nowhere, was good.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It was Iron Mike Sharp. Again, Alfred. He's been doing this the whole time. He thinks I'm digging this. He treats Elizabeth like a legit heel manager. Like, you know, she knows her. Feminine wiles kind of thing, and I like that. I love that about Alfred.
She's in on the conspiracy.
Thinking outside the box. She is part of the conspiracy. I'm digging that about Alfred. He's not afraid to buck the trend on these some of these heels that everybody wants to trash, or in this case, that you know all the other announcers feel that Elizabeth's just a victim of circumstance, but she's part of the problem, and I like that Alfred went that route. I really did. Now, Gorilla, of course, I have to pull a shirk here because Gorilla said that he won the title in November, but he actually won it in February. I'm probably overgrading this. I know I am. Kelly's probably like, you fucking idiot. But I'm sorry. I really liked it. I think Pedro really came out and, I mean, we all knew he wasn't going to win, but fuck it. I mean, go out there and act like you're and work like you're going to. Did I like the ending? Yeah, the ending was a little wonky, but it was a good story to tell. I really enjoyed it. I think it was good for Savage, except losing. That was kind of stupid, but whatever. But I think this was just as legitimate a title defense for Savage as anything else he's faced has been. You know, again, I might be overgrading it, but I really do think that Pedro really put in this match and made it a lot better than it would than any business being. So I'm giving it 3 stars and I'm pretty comfortable with it, Kel.
Yeah, well, I went 2.5. So 3 isn't outrageous or anything. I'm not like Parv. I mean, Parv was the one who totally hates Morales, like to the point of like blind hatred, similar to his hatred for Chief J. Strongbow.
Well, that's different because Chief J. Strongbow is fucking terrible. So that one I don't mind. Watching these old MSG house shows on the network right now, I watched the October 23rd, 78 one the other night. I was so happy when Chief Maivia turned on him. I thought he was going to fucking kill him. I would love that. Oh, he's a fucking asshole. I can't stand Chief J. Strongbow. But yeah, Parv needs to watch that match because I think sometimes Pedro gets a little undue. Yeah, we kind of trashed him and he had some shitty matches, but he's not as bad as people make him out to me.
No, I mean, he has plenty of dud matches on his resume, but he has plenty of great matches too, and it's mostly against guys like Savage, Ken Patera when he was at his peak, Sergeant Slaughter at his peak. There's a match with Cowboy Bob Orton from December, Boston Garden, that everybody should watch. That's a really awesome match, fun little brawl. So no, I mean, Morales at times, and here he looked, I don't know if it was just he was extra motivated being in the IC slot or Savage, but he looked like 5 years younger for some reason. Yeah. He seemed, it was like a whole different Morales.
He was using the peanut butter solution.
Yeah.
Working on his extremities.
Yes. It'll make all things grow. but still the crowd was, there was definitely quite a few boos for Pedro. It's not the Pedro from the 70s that was one of the kings of New York anymore. And Savage, I mean, he had to literally punch his way through the crowd to get to the ring. He's, you know, at his peak here. It's great to see all these heels on this show just simultaneously being red hot, like Savage, Orndorff, Jake Roberts,
Adonis.
Adonis to an extent too. And the theme of the night is those heels getting, except for Adonis, getting good matches out of guys that we haven't seen have good matches.
Right.
So, yeah, this was perfectly fine. The finish, yeah, I mean, Pedro, even in 1986, won't do a friggin' job in New York, and to the Intercontinental Champion, no less. Like, he has to win by countout.
Yeah, that's so stupid.
the ending was bad. I agree with that.
I mean, clearly there's still protecting Pedro, and I don't think this was a match they ran anywhere else because it wouldn't have meant anything. I mean, they were running this because of the Puerto Rican fans in New York for Pedro, you know, because it meant something in New York, but outside of New York it didn't. Morales was pretty much doing the jobber to the stars, or just beating guys like Renee Goulet and Iron Mike Sharp and stuff in the other cities. But yeah, Savage was so good at this time, and even gets a good match at Pedro Morales. I went 2.5 stars.
All right. Fink comes out to run down the card for the next month, including some big announcements that we'll cover in a couple weeks. And that brings us to our final match of the night between the World Tag Team Champion British Bulldogs, the greatest gymnastic team in the world today, taking on the Funks, Dory, or I should say, excuse me, Hoss and Jimmy Jack. Fun enough match on paper. Makes you wonder what this feud could have been if Terry was in there. We talked about this a bit, especially on WrestleMania 2, that it looked like the Funks were being prepared to challenge the Bulldogs for the titles. And we kind of get it here. The Bulldogs rolling as champs, thwarting all comers since Mania. Funks doing their thing, but pretty much jobber to the star mode, maybe a notch higher. Big pop for Bulldogs and Albano as usual. Dynamite and Haas open up. Dynamite sets the tone with two hard shoulder blocks. Haas rolls outside to regroup, and as he returned, Davey met him with slams and sent him right back outside. Dynamite tags back in and locks up with Haas, who lands a few shots. Dynamite comes back with a dropkick and gets two, but Jimmy Jack breaks it up, drawing Davey in as well. The champs get rammed into each other as the Funks kick and slug away until some miscommunication ends with both Funks getting knocked outside. Haas comes back in, lands some shots on Dynamite before taking him over the butterfly suplex for two. Haas pitches Dynamite to the floor, meets him out there, and shoves him into the barricade. Back inside, Dynamite battles back with chops until Haas takes him over the back suplex. Davey tags in and mows through Haas until things break down and everyone brawls. The Bulldogs get a double dropkick, and Davey press slams Dynamite onto Jimmy Jack for the win, popping the crowd and Al big. This was fine, but way too short to mean anything. The Bulldogs look crisp, as always, and it was smart to leave Haas in there for most of this. It needed more time to really get anywhere, but the Bulldogs keep rolling as the Funks blow their big chance. I went 1.5 stars on this final match tonight, Kelly.
Yeah, not much. Of all the matches, this is the one I took the least amount of notes for. My first note is that this would have been a great matchup if it was Terry instead of Jimmy Jack. And given time and not put into the curfew slot or whatever, you know, where they're just playing out the string here. Very short, but it made the Bulldogs look great. I mean, we've seen a few matches where the Bulldogs, it went a bit too long, where the Bulldogs should have just, you know, killed the team they were against. Mm-hmm. And here they totally just killed the Funks. And that's fine because they're going nowhere. I don't think Dory had much time left in the territory. In fact, I know he was pretty much done.
A couple more days, pretty much, right?
Yeah, I think that may be true. The big event may be.
I think it is. I think that's it for him. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's done. Jimmy Jack's going to be condemned to Saturday TV matches, losing to the up and coming stars for the rest of his.
Actually, no. He wrestles at that same Green Bay show, September 30th. But he gets subbed out all before then. Hang on. It looks like. So maybe that's. No, he fights at Colorado Springs September 1st. So he wrestles a little bit after the big event. Through the end of August, he gets subbed out a bunch in September, and then he's on that show. So I don't know if he really wrestled on that show September 30th or not. But
That's what I was going to say. Sometimes like he was advertised for a show, but and they'll put it in the records as him being there when he actually didn't appear also.
Yeah, so it looks like he at least was there through the end of the month. So maybe like four or five more matches after this one.
Yeah, pretty much done. So this was essentially a squash to make the Bulldogs look great, and it did. The Bulldogs got in a bunch of cool-looking offense, and yeah, not much else to say. I went a star and a half.
What do you think, Scott?
I gave this a star. It was pretty awful. Jimmy Jack sucks. looking back, it's so disappointing that Terry wasn't there, and I contend still that if Terry was here, the Funks would have won the titles at some point. Even if it was for like a month and then the Bulldogs won it back. I really do think that. But with this fucking slug, absolutely not. Not the Bulldogs' best effort. I did like Dynamite and Haas did have a couple of minutes of decent work. But other than that, this match was terrible. Jimmy Jack's just not good. And as Kelly said, he deserves to be relegated to shitbag status. It was fine putting it in the curfew role because you didn't want to put it anywhere else. You didn't want it because none of the other matches deserve to be clipped because of it. So I kind of dug the fact that you know this match that was clearly not going to be that great actually was last. So your total runtime only 5:27, which is perfectly fine for this. And we end on kind of a dud, but it doesn't take away from the show for me. I thought the show overall was fantastic. And, you know, this main event was just, you know, it was only 5.5 minutes and we just wrap up with it. And they kind of quickly, you know, they try to do like a whole, you know, hog tying thing, but you could tell that Gorilla and Alfred were like, all right, let's get the hell out of here. This copyright was fast. So I gave it a star. It was nothing earth shattering. We kind of, I don't want to say we end the show on a downer, but, not the best effort for the Bulldogs. And,
no, I mean, at least it's quick and to the point. So
Jimmy Jack. Yeah, it's pretty quick. It's quick and painless. So.
Let's get to our awards to wrap things up.
Let's get to the awards
for tonight. So we have our match of the night. To me, was pretty simple. I went – actually, no, it wasn't. You know, I went back and forth on this one. But I ended up going with Machine, Stud, and Bundy. I like the story in that bit the best. I mean, I did like Savage and Pedro, but I thought that tag had the best story to it, and I liked the whole premise behind it.
I graded it highest. I got to go with Savage and Pedro. We may never have Pedro may never get a match of the night again. So I really liked it. It was really, really good. And Pedro made a match better than I thought it was going to be. So I got to give the nod for me to that match.
Yeah, I went with Savage and Morales too. I think I had a 3-way tie for stars, with that match, the Machine's tag, and also, Roberts and Afia gave 2.5 stars. So I guess I don't know. The finish to the Machine's tag, I just was a little too sloppy to give it match of the night. So I went kind of default with Savage here. And yeah.
All right. Our cousin Junior, our worst match of the night, I think was a clear winner tonight. And that was Tony Atlas versus Adrian Adonis.
Yep.
Yeah. That match was abysmal. Yeah.
Okay. Our MVP, went a little bit off the grid here with this one. I went Giant Machine. I thought Andre was really great here. He was super over. He comes in and cleans house, and then he beats the shit out of Stud after, and they're celebrating. And I thought he had the best presence, no surprise, on the show. And to me, he was the best of the bunch on a show that was pretty good, but not really filled with anything that jumped off the page. What do you think, Scott?
I got to go with Orndorff. He was a stud tonight. No pun intended. He owned the crowd. The match was solid. You thought I was going to give it to Pedro. I wasn't going to go that far. But no, I gotta give it to Orndorff. He was fucking amazing tonight on this night. Amazing. Own the crowd, drill the pile driver, put over the whole stealing the real American. He was fantastic tonight. I gotta give it to Orndorff.
What do you think, Kel?
Well, yeah, we're gonna have three different MVPs because I'm going with Jake the Snake Roberts. He grabbed me. You know, yeah, I mean, an Orndorff is a worthy pick, and so is Andre or Giant Machine. I mean, yeah, there's a few candidates. Savage could have been an MVP. So, yeah.
All right, Uncle Elmer for the worst worker. I'm guessing we're all in agreement on this one. Mr. Junior's Universe, Tony Atlas.
Yep.
Absolutely, go away.
Okay. Best moment, this is where I gave it to Orndorff. Just his heat overall. That whole match, the heat that he generated, to me was the best moment of the night. Was just watching the crowd just rain and shower him with all these boos. Paid off that angle. So it just showed that it was such a well-designed angle. Just immediately here, this everyone hates him for what he did. So that's what I went with for best moment. What do you have, Cal?
I second that. Okay. I second that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a great moment, but I went with Giant Machine's surprise entry into the tag match. That was the one that, for me, you know, that popped me, where I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, that was my first thought, but the Orndorff, yeah, his heat was amazing, so that's a worthy choice, too.
All right, our Junior Mr. Universe Award for the biggest juice head of the night. I went with the guy's named after. I think we had to give Tony Atlas one last. I don't think anyone else jumped off the page. I mean, the Bulldogs, of course, always are pretty jacked up. But I think Atlas, to me, stood out as usual.
No, he always does. If there's one thing he is good at, it's looking jacked. So I'll give that one to him.
What do you think, Al?
Yeah, I mean, it's his last appearance. The award's named after him. You got to give it to him. So that's another triple crown here for me, or for all of us, I guess. Atlas in the worst match, worst worker, and also the Junior Mystery.
Well, now with a bang, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, so this is an interesting card to grade overall. The only match under two stars for me, or I had two. The only thing under a star and a half was the one dud. And to only have nothing between a dud and a star and a half is, like, pretty crazy for these shows. Everything else was between a star and a half and two and a half. So to me, that speaks to a very solid, strong outing on the MSG house show scale. But overall, nothing really jumped off the page to, like, grab hold and say this was a really good card. So I can't put it up there with, like, my best grades. But I did enjoy watching it. I'm going to go 4.5. Because to me, I mean, the highest I've gone on these house shows is like 6.5-ish. And that's really good. So I feel funny giving this a 5 because I don't think there's anything that great. But again, it's a very strong, for a Dog Days of Summer show with a split crew and no marquee match. I mean, there really wasn't even a name draw match, really. I'd go 4.5. I think they delivered just fine. What'd you have for this one, Scott?
I was going to... I was battling what to do. When I finished watching, I was going to give it a 7, but then I said, "No, that's ludicrously high. God. That's ridiculous." I was going to give it a 6. I'll give it 5.5. But I really liked it, and I think that those that showed up tonight worked their ass off. But no, you're right, JR. There was no marquee guy, no Hogan. As much as I like Pedro tonight.
Yeah, right. Savage is there. That's not a name match. Yeah, that's not a name match to sell.
Yeah. And the tag title match was the shits. But there was some stuff that was really good that I think we didn't expect to be really good. So I'll give it 5.5. I want to give it 6, but I think it's just not quite a 6. But for a show, like you said, that doesn't really have much of a star power, I think 5.5 is a pretty good grade. So, what do you think?
Yeah, Kel? Yeah. I mean, I liked it too. There was one dud, but it was a short one. Nothing. There was no 20-minute. Well, there was a 20-minute draw, but it wasn't a bad 20-minute draw. I mean, the machines were the attraction, I think, for sure, for this one. Basically, still riding Andre's drawing power, so there was that. That was definitely the main event as far as what was probably, you know, advertised
right,
the most.
Sure.
But I don't think there's any matches on here that I would say to somebody, oh, you got to see this. Robert's performance was, like I've said, really good. You know, if you want to see an example of, you know, a masterclass in healing,
there you go, watch that. But it's not a match. It's not a must-see match or anything. It's against Siviafi, for Christ's sakes. But, yeah, like a lot of two-star matches. So, yeah, I went right in the middle, five. You know, it's like kind of the definition of average, middle, right? Nothing more than 2.5, nothing, one dud, but yeah, nothing else extremely low. So yeah, five's about right.
All right, that'll do it for this week's episode. No feedback this week, but definitely get feedback in for next week, since, you know, I think a lot of these shows just haven't been seen or aren't easily accessible. So for the bigger shows, we'll be doing the feedback. So the pay-per-views, the Saturday Night's Main Events, that you know, we'll put a dedicated thread. So we will have a thread go up for the big events before next Monday night. Kelly, that means you get the week off since we're outside the garden. You can enjoy that. We're going to have Mr. D'Amato back with us. Of course, he was with us at WrestleMania 2, so he'll be joining us for the big event. If you do have feedback, make sure you leave it in the designated post at PlaySummation.com or on social media. As always, be sure to check out Jeff Learns Wrestling. Like I mentioned, the newest episode dropped last week with all the build to WrestleMania 3. And also, we had a pretty interesting new letters from Center Stage, where Alan and I interviewed the gambler's son, Jeff. The gambler, of course, a legendary WCW jobber, and his son Jeff joined us. And it was a really fun interview because he was with his dad backstage through most of his career. So he had a lot of interaction with backstage WCW during that time. It's a quick interview. It's about 25 minutes. But it was a really good chat, and I recommend that. And of course, Letters from Center Stage drops each and every Friday. In addition to that, be sure to check out all of our pod blasts and podcasts. For the PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project that's ongoing. You can join in on that on Facebook by asking for access to the PTBN GWWE Facebook group, or just reach out to us elsewhere and we'll get you added. You can, of course, submit a list without even being part of that group as well. Scott, what do you have coming up this week? Anything?
We do have, of course, the next episode of the main event, and I'm not gonna tip my hat, but JR, this week, the Godfather and I are going to have a Clotheslines and Headlines alumnus
nice.
On the show this week.
Me?
But I will,
I'm gonna be on.
I will not. Nate's always on.
No, me.
No, you're not on though.
Oh, okay.
Oh no, you're not on. Sorry. Good. Well, you would know. Or maybe you wouldn't. Now, if you'd like to come on, you can. But no, we have a great one of your boys from Clotheslines and Headlines will be joining us this week on main
it's
event.
Kevin
and,
Kelly,
mostly WWE centric episode. Not, it's what?
Not Kevin Kelly, is it?
No, it's not Kevin Kelly.
No, good.
It's not Kevin Kelly. It's not Steve Willey either. And Pete doesn't count. We've already had Pete on.
All right.
But
we list will. This is whittled down for you people. That's keep going.
There you go. Keep going. So, and we'll, it's mostly going to be WWE centric. Not much going on elsewhere. Mm-hmm. We'll give you a, you know, points update on the G1 climax, but we were going to have Pete on, but Pete's going to be on the road, and he'll let us know when he's back. He'll actually come back for the next episode of main event for his wrestling travails. But yeah, so look, coming up this week, newest episode of main event, and a special guest, an alumnus of Clotheslines and Headlines. So stay tuned.
All right, Kelly, anything you got in the hopper?
Still waiting to drop are the for you considerations that I did with Will. Not sure if it's this week.
I think every other week is the schedule. So when did the latest one on the Rock and Wrestling with Johnny Sorrow and El Barriqua, our buddy, was on that one. So I think that was last week. So probably next week, or was that 2 weeks ago that one dropped?
No, that was last week. I think he's been putting them out every week, actually. So
I have to consult Brad.
He recorded a ton of them, so who knows? Yeah. But yes, I promise you'll eventually hear my voice on two of those shows. I'm not sure when. Sometime before the before Christmas, I would hope.
Just like Brian Cutable, when one before Christmas. So, all right. So, why don't we go to wrap up? Scott and I will be back next Monday with D'Amato talking big event. Kelly, you'll be back in a couple weeks, I believe, to talk September, I guess, right? Or no, September. And then we get back to September.
9:22.
Very good, very good. Okay. For the boys, Justin, we're out. We'll talk to you next week. Everyone enjoy. Everyone go get a hand job from Harley Race.
Oh.
In his wheelchair.
Oh. But you still don't pay me no attention. Listening to what your girlfriend's mention. He's a slut, he's a hoe, he's a freak. Got a different girl every day of the week.
it's cool. I'm not trying to put a rush on you. I had to let you know that I got a crush on you.
Why you trying to catch Sea Breeze? I'm in the PVs, all chrome Z3s, decked out TVs, CDs with crazy bass. Keep my lady lace. Don't be fooled by the baby face. I hope you're not, cause your thighs got me hot. Only one plan, that's to rise to the top. I told you before when I first pursued, I want an interlude in the nude. Conversation like food when we get in the mood. Listen, girlfriend, we don't mean to be rude, but anything I touch comes straight to the rear. I take chicken heads like the playmate of the year. Cause when I first met her, she had the legs and the temper. Game real good, sex was even better. I got it for the cheddar once I hit it in the sack. Cause I'm C's, aka long dick from the back, huh?
I know you see me on the video.
True.
I know you heard me on the radio.
True.
But you still don't pay me no attention. Listening to what your girlfriends mention. He's a slut, he's a hoe, he's a freak. Got a different girl every day of the week. It's cool, not trying to put a rush on you. I had to let you know that I got a crush on you.
Yo, shorty, won't you go get a bag of the lethal? I'll be right here just chilling with your people. You know Junior Mafia was just a preview. I know I had you open, so I'ma leave you. Especially when I know your man is feeble. It's these days you never own, you know how we do. My game is tight, we do the same every night. I'm smooth as the words that come from Frank White. You messing with city kings with glistening wings. That's gonna show you good times, pretty thing. Cause you were spotted in the club looking exotic. Find somebody short, dark, and chocolate. You got it? Any plans to change, yo, stop it. Junior Mafia, yeah, we all about the profit. I'm the right dude to get you in a nice mood. Flossing rocks the size of ice cubes, huh?
I know you see me on the video.
True.
I know you heard me on the radio.
True.
But you still don't pay me no attention. Listening to what your girlfriends mention. He's a slut, he's a hoe, he's a freak. Got a different girl every day of the week. It's cool, not trying to put a rush on you. I had to let you know that I got a crush on you. I know you see me on the video.
True.
I know you heard me on the radio.
True.
But you still don't pay me no attention. Listening to what your girlfriends mention. He's a slut, he's a hoe, he's a freak. Got a different girl every day of the week. It's cool, not trying to put a rush on you. I had to let you know that I got a crush on you. I know you see me on the video.
True.
I know you heard me on the radio.
True.
But you still don't pay me no attention. Listening to what your girlfriends mention. He's a slut, he's a hoe, he's a freak. Got a different girl every day of the week. It's cool, not trying to put a rush on you. I had to let you know that I got a crush on you.